Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and the king of Facebook Marketplace. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Windy. Fucking hell, Facebook Marketplace is such a nightmare. I never go on Facebook anymore, but now I need, you know, secondhand tables on the cheap. And it turns out there's loads and loads of notifications of people commenting on Extra Inch posts that I'm tagged in, and old friends I haven't spoken to in years messaging me 8 weeks ago and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to distract the podcast with tales of Facebook Marketplace, but it's been eventful.
Maybe like have a think of the good ones over the next week, and then next week you can do your top three Facebook Marketplace tales.
Okay.
Bardi,
it's the question when, is it still available? That's what you get all the time. But then you go yes, and then you never hear from them again. They obviously changed their mind.
Bardi, thank you so much for stepping up last week. Superb job hosting.
No, don't go away again, Chris, all right? Stay with us, because it's really difficult. You learn a whole new appreciation of being able to do multitasking. And I really did feel like Hoiberg, that I can just do one thing and I can't do anything else. And now I've realized my role in this podcast is I'm the Hoiberg. I shouldn't try and do the crossing or the kind of advanced passing, but it's just not me. So I'm glad you're back, Chris. You're the Ericsson of the podcast. I'll just go back to being a cement mixer.
And a massive thank you to Chris Summersell, our friend and my co-podcaster on Straight Off the Training Ground. He stepped up, did a fantastic job, some great analysis of that Brighton game. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that. I had some stuff going on last week, which I'll talk about in the future, but I'm not ready to talk about it just yet. This month, we partnered with Humans of Purpose, which is a weekly podcast featuring interviews with purpose-driven leaders whose work is having a positive social impact and making the world a better place. Mike's guests come from leading charities, social enterprises, purpose-driven businesses, but also include authors, politicians, philanthropists, and more. It's genuinely a really good podcast. I wouldn't engage in a partnership with something I didn't enjoy myself. I would strongly urge you to have a listen. We've spoken a bit about the episode about rap. It was like, cling film and industrial rap for palettes. We also spoke about the Blackfly larvae protein. They are two really fascinating episodes, and they're sort of slightly scientific, but there are other really great conversations as well. Would definitely urge you to search for Humans of Purpose in your preferred podcast player. And if you like the show, make sure you subscribe and leave a review, and you can learn more at humansofpurpose.com. Let's talk a little bit about Brentford, possibly the most infuriating Spurs match of the season. Starting off the lineups, I was really excited when I saw a lineup. Sessegnon for Reguilon, and I thought, yeah, that's just what we need. That's just the ticket. That'll see us right.
I mean, I was interested to see that as well. Reguilón hasn't been performing well. I thought Sessegnon could step up. But yeah, I guess he couldn't. And yeah, it's just Royal. He was the one. It was one of the most frustrating performances I've seen from a Spurs player. And just him and Sessegnon just didn't have a good game, didn't have a good time. And I just don't see them working ever at Spurs. Royal for sure. Sessegnon, something drastic has to happen over the summer. Something needs to change in his mind or in his body, because I just don't think he's cut out for it.
So when Matt Doherty got injured, I think I said in the podcast that I don't think we'll notice the effects too much, that it's only a small drop off that we'll cope without him. And I kind of still feel like if Doherty was playing, the result would have been the same. I don't think there would have been any difference. Maybe there would have been a slight difference in terms of how we build up. But for me, the problem was not so much the wing-backs per se. It was the situations we were giving the ball to the wing-backs in. Basically, where Brighton had completely suffocated our ability to pass the ball into midfield, Brentford did that in a slightly different way. They allowed us to play the first pass into midfield, and then they were just all over us in terms of the automations. They didn't let us play the layback or the ball forward, or when the ball was played forward, it was a really it had to be a really safe pass, which is in front of a defence. And then, you know, Sessegnon and Emerson were left with multiple men to beat, which, you know, we know from watching them, neither of them can really beat a man 1v1, let alone two. It's just asking players to do things they're not comfortable with doing. And I think that's part of the problem with this team. When the team does stop the automations effectively, there's no kind of maverick there. There's no Ndombele to come on and be the guy that does something a bit different. Yeah, we've got Lucas, for what it's worth. I mean, he's a maverick for sure, but, you know, fairly ineffective most of the time, if we're being completely honest. I mean, I've long believed that the strength of Conte's tactics would be the key component in leading this squad to the top four, and I felt really confident about that. I felt confident when things weren't going well. I then felt very smug when things were going well, and, you know, we looked odds on to finish in the top four. And the last couple of games have just been a bit of a wake-up call. Nathan, what did you think of Brentford tactically?
I thought they were really, really well prepared, just as I thought Brighton were, in a very different way the week before. The difference there, and you've sort of gone into it there, like, the difference there is that Brighton really denied all access to Son and Kulusevski. They set up to just constantly block all of the ways in to our front three. Whereas Brentford were inviting that pass so that they could pounce on it a lot and read the back pass, and Son got turned over a lot in that game, you know. It's kind of that trap again we're getting into, where it's like, it's correct to praise how well the last two teams have set up against us, but you also have to acknowledge that we're aspiring to be at a level where you blow teams like that away anyway, even if they mm-hmm. come with some smart mm-hmm. ideas. So I don't want to just say, oh, well, you know, these sort of mid-table teams were just too good for us. Oh, well, because, you know, we have a multi-title winning coach in charge. Yeah. But I do want to give props to them first off. So Conte, after the game, was quite calm on the situation. He said that after Brighton, they spent the week preparing for, you know, dealing with a team who were setting up to deny access to a front three all game. And I guess maybe if the preparations focus that heavily in that kind of area, and then you have a team that are actually going to come out more of an aggressive press and look to turn over on the pass, then maybe you're misprepared for that game. Although maybe that's more like what the second half looks like anyway from Brentford. And so we should have been better there. The thing is, like, the first half was Brentford being really good, I think. Really, really well set up, really well prepared defensively, really strong energy from them. The second half was just flat from Tottenham, I felt. I think we could have taken the second half. Maybe we weren't actually very mentally strong in this game. Maybe I think we didn't really push for it in the second half, and maybe we could have done. And we were sort of feeling bad about the last, you know, three halves of football prior to that point. Mm.
I did expect us to grab a winner. I thought Brentford had done okay. You know, I don't think Brentford are this magical team. They're a little bit. They do whatever they do good. They do well. They're a bit like Burnley in that sense. It's that they're really good at set pieces. They're really good at the throw-ins and the corners and applying pressure. But I was never really concerned that they were going to create something other than through a set piece or through chaos. And I just thought as the game wore on, we would get control of that and we would turn it around to our favour. And I still had faith all the way through that we were going to win it. And as the ball kind of floated up to Kane and he got ready for that overhead, I just thought I honestly thought that was a goal, and that would have been just a brilliant piece. But I think the problem with not having Doherty is Emerson, at least Doherty can kind of step into midfield and make another, like he becomes almost like a central midfielder, and his passing is a bit better, it's a bit more accurate, it's a bit crisper, it's a bit more progressive. I think Emerson is just, and I don't want to keep shitting on Emerson. Also,
he's a defensive fullback in a 4-4-2, and that's, you know, he's not ever going to be anything else. He's not versatile. He's really not a versatile player.
He's worse under pressure than I thought he would be. Same. Though. Like, that's where I'm really disappointed with him. Like, fair enough, like, if we're in a situation, remember the Watford game, that was where the tide really turned against him. Mm. If we're in a situation where it's like, oh, he's getting into the final thirds and he's not putting in good balls, like, you know, fair enough, that you can say we changed coach and we changed tactical ideas and there's a problem there and that's not his fault. But looking at the way he's playing under pressure, looking at his ability to contribute to build up play, that's where I'm really disappointed in him. Yeah. And disappointing in that signing.
Yeah, I think so. And I thought we actually played better when Davinson came on and we went, and then we moved Davies as a left wing back. I just thought Davies gave us a little bit more kind of the Doherty wing back style, or that his passing is fine, his understanding of the game is good. And I do think it's a problem. And I'm not sure where Conte goes for the rest of the season now with these fullbacks. I don't see there being an upturn in form from Royale. It's not going to click for him in the same kind of way it clicked for Doherty. It's just not for him. And I think at left back, we're going to continue to see either Reguilón or Sessegnon start in rotation, and with one of them coming on or off according to fitness. But I think we need to flag Højbjerg here. And I thought
he was fine. I thought he was one of our better players on the day for me.
But the problem is him being fine is the problem. Like, he needs to be better. And this is my issue with Højbjerg. It's all well and good in certain, when the game is all right for him and it's nice and open, he's fine. But in these kind of matches, he doesn't offer us any kind of creativity, nothing. I thought Bentancur, and you'll probably throw a stat at me now, but I thought Bentancur, at least I had the impression that something was going to happen when he had the ball. And I had faith that his passing would lead to something. Højbjerg, I never get that. Maybe that's bias.
I honestly felt the exact opposite. I felt like Højbjerg whipped, like he was...
Were you going to say he whipped something?
He whipped a few balls around the corner quickly forward. And it was the only player to actually put some zip on his passes. Because I was thinking to myself, I was watching the game with my parents. And it was lovely to watch a game with them. It should have been such a fun occasion. And
is your mum fully coys?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Parents are both fully coys. And we're all getting very frustrated and just a bit like, oh my God, this is not how any of us expected this to go. And a lot of the time, I'm just like, games are decided 90% on tactics and everything else is just whatever. But in this occasion, there was definitely a tactical element. So Brentford did a really, really good job of counter-pressing and stopping the lay-back and then the ball forward. But there were times that we had the ball in reasonable areas and we were so slow in possession, unacceptably slow, I think. There's just a lack of tempo. And I felt like Højbjerg was the only one who was trying to actually inject a bit of, you know, get up and go in some of the attacking moves. And I would equally pick on Kane and say the amount of times that he dawdled on the ball and took extra touches in midfield. Mm. So So one of our ex-subs, Dan Voodoo Chopsticks, he has a theory that Kane is playing like injured Kane does. Like he's not sure of himself and therefore he's probably, you know, perhaps taking, these aren't Dan's words, these are mine, sort of taking it on a step further, but perhaps he's taking those touches because he doesn't have the same trust in his body at the moment to do the things he was doing a couple of weeks back. And he took a whack against Villa. And then Robert Sanchez, the Brighton goalkeeper, fell awkwardly on Kane's ankle and he limped away from that tackle looking like he was really struggling. And I'm not saying he's injured, but I'm not saying he's not injured either. I think that's a pretty good theory. It was a very sort of lackluster display. And I agree with Nathan. I think we were feeling sorry for ourselves a lot. After Brighton, and maybe the players were like, well, we've seen what happens here, and couldn't then sort of overcome that in the Brentford match, which was really disappointing. Having said that, Bardi's right, you know, that Kane effort, it was really close to flying in the bottom corner and we'd have ground out at an unwarranted and unlikely 1-0 win, and we'd be feeling so different about things right now.
They had their opportunities. They hit the post twice.
Yeah.
We had a couple of block shots. Brentford were good.
They were good. And this Brentford were without literally five first choice players were unavailable for Brentford. You know, they're not world beaters, but Ayer's a good defender and Pinnock's a good centre back. Canos is their right wing back normally, and Onyeka's their midfield sort of defensive player, and Norgaard's Mr. Reliable for them in midfield. So this wasn't a full strength Brentford team by any stretch. And we were second best for the majority of the game. It is a concern, and I don't want to be I don't want to project forward at this point. I think we just need to see how the Leicester match goes, because there's no point, you know, we've got a whole summer to be doom and gloom. There's no point when the season's still ongoing to be doom and gloom, I think. But this was a concern for sure.
Yeah, and also me and Chris spoke about it last week. Sun, in these kind of games where you're not getting anything from Sun, and Reddit got a bit upset, accusing me of trying to sell Sun or get rid of Sun. But I do think when the game is like this, or for all of Sun's brilliance, his weakness is something that impacts the team. And sometimes I do think we need something other than Sun, someone who's better facing their own goal than Sun in these situations. And I thought that kind of showed. I would have liked to have seen perhaps Bergwijn get a run out for Sun instead.
So I wanted to talk to you both about this, because that was what I was screaming out for as well. I thought Bergwijn was the obvious sub. We were really struggling to get in behind Brentford and to stretch them. And Bergwijn's one of the best in the squad at making runs in behind. His movement on the sharp end is really good. Conte just doesn't rate him, does he? He can't rate him, because if, for God's sake, this was the perfect opportunity to bring him on.
It's strange, because apparently Conte blocked or decided against his transfer in January after he scored twice against Leicester. It was incredible. And then we just haven't seen him again. And I mean, yeah, I Son had a really poor game. I also think that, yeah, Bergwijn can run in behind, but other than that, like, Son is very, very much in a tier of his own in terms of his ability to threaten him behind in this squad. And I, for that reason, I kind of never really want him off the pitch.
Sure.
But I think that I think that it's crazy how little of Bergwijn we've seen since the Leicester game. Like, the fact that he isn't just coming on at 60 minutes for whoever, match after match after match, is so wasteful of his talents. And seeing as much of Lucas as we've seen is similarly ridiculous, you know. I'm really disappointed with the substitutions. I think that I am ready to see something a little more creative at wing back, whether that's Kulusevski or whatever, or I don't know, experimenting with the back four, or I don't know something other than what we're seeing at the moment, because Royale just looks so poor. And I appreciate that, like, his confidence is shot to bits, but he's got to work himself out of that, to be honest. He's got to just be a lot calmer on the ball, which again is something that I thought was a strength of his, looking at his play.
It may well be in the future, but he's in such a bad place right now.
Yeah.
And we've saw that with Doherty as well, you know. He looked an absolute nightmare on the ball just a matter of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Confidence is such a huge thing.
That's very true. Yeah, I mean, I remember doing a Lo Celso video and watching the team be afraid to pass the ball to Doherty just as they are afraid to pass it to Royale now, you know. So maybe that's something that can be flipped on its head, but it's not happening right now, is it? So I think that we need to come up. We can't. Who are we playing next?
Leicester.
We've got to go into the Leicester game with a different idea. What we're going to do at right wing back and be a little bold and experimental there if we need to be. Maybe that doesn't happen till half time even. But
I think there'll be something. I think at the very least it'll be Sessegnon on the right and Reguilon on the left. I mean, I think that would be a better. I think that'll be a better selection than this. The last two selections. Personally, so Stephen says Conte really has no plan B, her and Bardi. I know you still really harbour a grudge against Pochettino for starting Fazio in that cup match against Arsenal.
I will never forget that day.
So Sanchez for Sessegnon on 74 minutes as our first sub is my Pochettino Fazio moment for Conte. I think this is one of the worst substitutions I have ever seen as a Spurs fan.
Conte said after the game that it's because Brentford were so threatening from their set pieces and throw-ins that he wanted and clearly wasn't happy with what Sessegnon was doing in his set piece role. That he wanted Davinson on to be good in the air and Davies to be an upgrade in Sessegnon in that area. But also we were drawing the game against like low mid table, like maybe even relegation threatened team. So.
I think Sessegnon can have no complaints about being taken off.
Oh, for sure. I've got no issue whatsoever with Sessegnon coming off. I think it was Sessegnon or Emerson had to come off, but I'd have done it earlier, personally, not 74 yes. minutes. But Sanchez coming on, I think is indefensible. I mean, I get it. He's worried about set pieces. You know, we might lose the game, but we also might win the game if you make a positive change, right? And we just, in the few minutes before that, we'd seen Davis really getting forward well from centre-back and doubling up on that side and creating another threat for Brentford to worry about. And I liked Davis in this game at the left centre back position. I thought he was doing a really adequate job. Don't get me wrong, did absolutely fine at left wing back as well. But why not bring Lucas or Bergwijn on at left wing back, or switch to a back four, or do something different? Leaving it till the 74th minute and bringing on a centre back. And a centre-back who's not comfortable playing on the left as well. Let's be clear about that. Sanchez is not a good ball-playing centre-back, especially not the left. I thought that was an indefensible substitution, personally.
I mean, a couple of things here. I've never heard you go all your dad's Twitter before, Windy, so I kind of enjoy that. But the other thing is, this selection crime doesn't even make the top 10 of Pochettino's selection crime. We could do a whole podcast on those disasters. But I thought, this isn't me because I like Sanchez and I criticise him enough. I thought we looked better with Davies at left wing back. I just thought the team had more balance, and he wanted to keep his back three, so he put in Sanchez. Maybe we should have gone to a back four. Maybe we should have done that. But then you have the whole problem of Dier in a back four. I thought he left it a bit late to make the substitution. If it was all about set pieces, he could have done this, I don't know, after 20 minutes. But I didn't think it was that bad. It was a little bit late. The Lucas for Emerson was way too late. And as we said, maybe Bergwijn should have come on at some point, or Winks for one of the midfield duo.
That's the other thing. Not using a third substitute in the match where we're struggling that much is just insane to me. I don't get it at all. I think he's going to have to be a little bit less risk averse. I think if we don't get fourth, then we'll look back at this game and this will be the moment that things, you know, really took a turn.
No, because if we'd
won that match, we'd be in such a strong position now.
But the reason why we're not getting fourth is we appointed Nuno Espirito Santo at the start of the season.
Sure.
That's easier to accept, isn't it?
You know, where we are now, where we were before the Brentford game, you know, I fully expect us to beat Brentford. If we'd beaten Brentford, we would be in a really strong position. Brentford are severely weakened by injuries to five key first team players. And I thought the management was substandard. I really thought the management of that game was substandard. I think Conte's a wonderful manager. I'm not happy with how he managed that game.
I hear your frustrations. I'm a little calmer on the whole situation. I think that things are still developing. Maybe you think I'm clutching at straws. We have been like strong defensively for a while now, and that does extend to the last two games, you know, considering where we've come from in that regard. I think these things will be ironed out. And I do think that both Brighton and Brentford gave us difficult things to overcome. I think as long as Conte now makes a bold
yes.
decision with what's going to happen at wing back, then I'm understanding of the sort of faltering over the last couple of games. And I still think Forth is very much on for us.
Yeah.
I don't like Buddy tweeted this the other day that like we won a bunch of games on the bounce and we're like, well, we're gonna win the league next year, and now we've drawn and we've lost, and it's, oh my god, we're gonna finish seventh, and you know, Conte and Kane are gonna leave and everything else. So oh, that's a good point. Is this in the running order? I haven't looked at the running order. Yeah, okay, it's in later. Okay,
but I think when we won those four games in a row and we scored all those goals, it was brilliant. And we are at a situation, I think, where with this team and with Conte, when it works, it's going to work brilliantly. But as we kind of said when he joined, when it doesn't work, it's not going to work, and it's going to be ugly and it's going to be horrible. And I kind of think that's where we are now. We are where we should be after 6-7 months of Conte with no preseason and not having his players. That's where we are. And I think we shouldn't be surprised about this. This is what we suspected to happen, and I think it will continue to happen. Will we win the next five games? Maybe, but I don't think we've won five games in a row since 2018-19, early season when we're still at Wembley, maybe. And it's a problem, but I don't think Arsenal are going to win five games in a row either. But it's tough now. It's tough. We did lose. The problem is it's been exacerbated by the fact that Arsenal won games that we didn't expect them to win.
Yeah.
And that's really what's come down to. Once again, we're comparing ourselves to somebody else, and we're all losing our minds.
I mean, I also do think that we are a team for whom momentum is such an important facet at the moment, with the sort of the way the squad is in terms of self-belief and the amount they truly believe in the tactics and think they're going to roll teams over. And we saw, you know, that momentum served us so well. And we saw, you know, Sessegnon's such a good example of that, I think, because when he was getting regular games, he looked really nervous for the first game. He looked slightly improved for the second game, and then he looked really good for the third game. And it's like he just has to learn to trust himself a little bit more with each game, and then he finally gets there. And then he gets injured, of course. And in this game, he was little boy lost again. He just looked like he was so shy. He didn't want to receive the ball. When he did receive it, he was apologising before he'd even kicked it, you know? And I think Sessegnon is such a talent, but mentally, there's a lot of work to do there. We can't carry a player who has to be built up for two or three games before he gets to stand to decent performance levels. And if he'd come in the run where we were doing well, I think it would probably be a different story. But he's come in against Brentford after the Brighton shambles, and it was tough for him. He was not good. He was really not good.
Yeah, I think you're on something there. I think for Sessegnon, he's the kind of player who, like, he's eventually going to find his feet, you know, in his mid-20s, and thrive, I think, as a player when he gets to that
talented,
stage.
Yeah, he's talented, for sure.
But, like, it's how long we can wait around for that, you know, and pay his wages and use up his squad place and all of that kind of stuff. I really want the best for him, but this is frustrating, to be honest. There's a really poor performance from him.
Jamie T says, in terms of priorities for the summer, how high up is a good set piece coach on that list?
I'm always calling for this. The thing is that, like, you don't have to prioritize it at all. This is the thing I'm always saying. It's like, yeah, of course we need improvements of wing back, an additional quality centre back. Of course we need creativity in central midfield. Of course we need a backup to Harry Kane. And after all of that, you can pay, you know, 200k a year for like a really high quality, because there isn't like huge demand even for a really high quality, or get two or three in, you know, get a team.
200k a year for a set piece coach, pretty good wages. I might quit my day job and just start taking some courses.
But I'm, you know, compared to what you're playing, Ryan Sessegnon to be terrified of football, you know. Matt Doherty used to be the example for that. Damn.
I do. Watching Liverpool at the weekend, even the way Alexander Arnold throws the ball in a throw in, have you seen the way he grips it? Totally different to anybody else. And just train him how to take throw ins, just train him how to cross the ball. It was interesting.
They have a specialist throwing coach.
Yeah, but that specialist throwing coach works at multiple clubs, not just Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was, you see the Brentford free corners, never near post. He was just going back post mm-hmm. as well. So Eriksen mm-hmm. can beat the front post if he wants to.
And find his man as a result, because it's played and there's movement off the ball that's pre-planned.
Yeah, really good routines. Tony drifting away at the back post, and twice it found him. Really, really
and
effective.
And he played it back across.
So it's not Eriksen being rubbish at corners, it's just us being rubbish at coaching or coming up with plans for corners.
Yeah, so he just resorted to the most common type of corner, which is flat near post deliveries.
Yeah.
He's good at them. The thing is, like, Eriksen's a good player of the ball. Eriksen's not a good set piece coach, right? And the problem is that we were leaving Eriksen to be the set piece coach, and he's going to say, well, I'm going to put it here, and I guess you guys just do whatever. You know, that
Eric make a run.
Eric make a run, right? Yeah. So, any strong feelings about Eriksen after this game?
I desperately wanted Eriksen before the game. I desperately want Eriksen now. I think he is such a no-brainer signing. It's a hand in a glove. It's perfect. It makes so much sense in every possible way.
Agreed. And with five subs, it makes even more sense.
Oh, yeah. It's just ideal. And I think we're going to qualify for Europe, aren't we? Don't know yet which competition it'll be. We're going to need a bigger squad and more trusted. A squad that's a larger squad where all the players are trusted, and Eriksen can be a part of that. It makes so much sense. It was great to see him get such a good reception and kind of and enjoy that reception as well. Just to go back briefly to the set piece point. There's no time, is there, to spend that much time on set pieces in the week, especially when you're playing two games a week. So it doesn't even necessarily need to be someone who's there full time. This could be a part-time post. This could be something you do over the summer even, and get them back in a couple of times a year. But do you remember when we got Santini and Martin Jol, we also hired a technical coach called Ricardo Moniz, who was brought in to be a skills coach, to teach the coaches how to train skill. And that wasn't just at the first team level, that was throughout the club. So he worked a lot with the academy and with the reserves, as they were then. I think a set piece coach could do the same. You bring in someone who can work with all age groups and improve set piece work for all age groups at Spurs, and all of the players benefit from that. I don't see a downside. I think it's absolutely crazy that maybe we're not giving Spurs credit and they already have a set piece coach. It looks unlikely based upon the output.
Get rid.
The thing is that, like, as is the default position, the set piece coach is your head coach and his assistant. So you're calling for Conte's head. That's what you're doing right now.
Yeah, my wife, whenever she sees Tottenham have a corner, when she happens to wander past the TV, she goes, "Not going to be a goal." She's convinced Tottenham are the worst team at corners. Yeah, she's right. What got me was during the week they released all the social media clips of all these plebs whipping the ball in and over the yellow fake wall, and then we get a free kick, and it was one of the worst crosses I've ever seen. I think it was Son tried to do an outswing.
Oh god, that was horrific.
I mean, late.
The worst one was the corner where Son inexplicably played it short to Sessegnon, who then messed up the pass back to Son, and they got the ball back immediately. It was just painful, absolutely painful to watch.
Absolute misery of it. It's just, come on. Just, it's late in the game. Just buy James Ward-Prowse. Just do it. I'm all on board that. I mean, he's not a worse passer than Højbjerg. I'm sure he can run around the points and fill those boots. And then he could take a free kick. He scored 9 free kicks this year, man. He would be our second top goal scorer if he was at our club.
So you mentioned the free kick video, Bardi, and the best free kick in that video was taken by Harvey White, who I believe to be the best set piece taker at the club. Conte name checked him last week. Nothing, not at a minute, and Spurs are trying to farm him out to a League One club on loan next season, by all accounts.
I think actually none of them were good set pieces in that video because the wall is 4 foot tall and doesn't jump.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there.
I've me and Harry Brooks, we disagree on a lot of stuff, but we've created a new company called jumpingwall.com and we're going to build a wall that jumps and sell it to Tottenham.
In the version 2, the Pro Max edition, they're going to jump independently at different heights as well. Yeah,
that's quite a few pistons you're going to have to put in that in that one. But I could see that working, almost like a what's that musical thing that goes up and down? Yeah, I don't know if it I don't know. I'm just seeing tubes
what,
of pipes.
What is that musical thing that goes up and down?
An organ.
Maybe an organ, yeah. I'm not musical. I'm here for the words, not the music.
Adamalist says, could it be that Conte won't implement a plan B until the players believe 100% in plan A? Otherwise, what did they work on all week?
I mean, what top manager has a significant plan B? I struggle to think of one. Maybe we saw the weekend Klopp put on Origi, but that's hardly, I wouldn't count that as a plan B. I think most top managers have their plan, and maybe they just alternate personnel or make little tweaks here and there. I'm not sure we're going to see Conte at halftime switch to 4-4-2. Just because it's not working, it just doesn't happen. Plan B is you chuck on Peter Crouch or Llorente and hope for the best. That is not a plan in itself.
So you said, Buddy, how many teams have a plan B? And what I'm going to say back to you is the two teams that we've played in the last two matches have had a specially devised plan to play Tottenham.
That's very different because you're talking about Brighton and Brentford, who are mid-table teams and are able and have that luxury to be able to adjust according to their opponents because they're the smaller team. Whereas with Tottenham, Manchester City, Liverpool, they have their way of playing and that's it. And they just go through teams by playing that style because they're really good at it or their players are really good at implementing it. I don't think you can be Tottenham Hotspur and continually adjust your tactics to match who you're playing. Would you want Spurs to change their formation according to Brentford? It just won't happen. And especially not with Conte. This man is a lunatic. This man believes that he's God's gift to football management. He's not going to change his tactics for Potter or some guy with long hair and a beard. It's just not going to happen.
I do wonder, firstly, yes, I completely agree with what you're saying for the most part there. I think, what does plan B exist as? Is it a change of formation? Is it a weird wingback choice? Because the thing is that, like, often, in fact, remember back to early Pochettino, we'd lose to Liverpool every time we played them because they would turn over our possession from the back. Mm. And we'd say, why won't we play plan B? Why won't we sit deep and play on the counter? First of all, that's kind of what we're already doing with Conte a lot of the time. So I don't know where you go as a plan B from there. Do you go to more stabled and settled possession? But eventually, after like 5 years, we then started to do that. We beat Liverpool at Wembley. We beat Dortmund and Real Madrid playing the same like medium low block on the counter kind of thing. So I do think there's some point to the question there because that's what you saw with Pochettino, right? Install plan A for several years, have that as the, and then you can more easily go back to it. And maybe we failed to go back to that after the point. Think about Champions League run being playing that kind of way and then trying to return to possession football. But
wasn't that us being the underdogs? Sacked. So those teams you mentioned were giants and we adjusted our style to play against them.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that was also true of the games against Liverpool in prior seasons, the games against City as well, maybe also. So I think there's some truth to that. But I think that for the most part, plan B with Conte is in the minor details, is in the switches, and we are seeing them. And he said, you know, we worked all week on how to play against Park Bus and how to find Kulusevski and Son, get, you know, deep in the opposition half. And so that's kind of what plan B is. And that's kind of what we didn't see it because it's not how the match materialized. But I think that, if you're talking about like a big overarching change of tactical philosophy, no, you won't ever see that with Conte, because that's just not even the kind of different tactical philosophy in which is much more sort of player decision based. That's never going to materialize. And there isn't even a way to just be like, hey guys, you know how for the last however many months I've been instructing you to play these patterns in the second half, just go out and just do whatever, really, like that. I the way to turn that off like that, because it's so like unconsciously drilled. It's not something that you can just switch to. So that doesn't really exist. So no, you're never going to see that. But the minor tweaks are happening all the time, I think.
Mm. And you see it all the time with Guardiola. When he comes up against a team and they can't break him down, people are like, why don't they just chuck a big man on, have a plan B? But that's not it. Yeah, I just don't see Conte doing it. The only big manager that I could think of that that does it is Jose Mourinho, but that's because he starts every game from the place of the small club. That's just his mentality and way of doing it. He's the only one that will play 45 minutes one way and then decide to change it all for the next 45 minutes. But as I said, that's because he operates from a place of weakness rather than a place of strength.
I do. I think I agree with what Nathan's saying about the plan being plan B being tweaks rather than a comprehensive plan change. And I think that was my frustration in this game, that I just didn't see many tweaks. So in the second half, Ben Davis got forward more and we tried to create more overloads on the left. That was pretty much the only tweak I saw. I think Romero could have been forward a lot more than he was. Like, we've seen him in previous games be allowed to roam a lot more. We could also have brought Kulusevski out to wing back. We could even have brought Bergwijn on and dropped Kane into central midfield. I mean, the way the game is going, I don't think that would have been a bad move at all, because I think Kane could play central midfield. He's got the qualities to play central midfield. So you bring Bergwijn on and you play him up front, you ask him to stretch the defence, and suddenly Kane's got more room to work in behind. But he just wasn't, for whatever reason, he wasn't particularly bold with his decision making. And as you say, Nathan, the decision he did make was to bring on a player to help defend set pieces.
I think the one thing I'd like to have seen more of against Brentford, against Brighton, going way back to Conte's first few matches as well, is more often removing the wing backs from build up entirely, yeah, having them push all, yeah, the way forward into the opposition's
totally
back line, and playing over the top from deep a little more often. Now we've seen that fail. We've seen us have a bad time with that and just continually lose possession. But I'd still like to see it from time to time, just especially when, you know, Royale and Sessegnon are getting turned over and fluffing so much, you know, in their own half. I would more often like to see us remove them from build up and have them just be options, and then maybe we see Kane, because I haven't seen a ton. I don't agree with Dan that Kane looks injured. I don't agree with the narrative about him like going off and playing golf. He doesn't look sluggish to me anymore, but we haven't seen a ton of him coming towards the play over the last couple of matches. I wonder if that's a tactical idea that's been recently introduced, and I think possibly to the negative. But I'm talking about in the situation where you push your wing backs up and remove them from build up. I think Kane comes deep more in those situations.
I think what would have helped us is a midfielder like Skip, someone that can carry the ball forward. I think he would have helped us. Sjoberg just doesn't do that, and I think it's something a little bit different. Sometimes perhaps Bentancur and Sjoberg are too similar, and something a little bit different in centre midfield might have worked.
I'd like to have seen more carrying from Bentancur in his time at Tottenham, to be honest.
Yeah.
So when Bardi said earlier, you're going to whip out a stat on me when we were talking about Sjoberg, I did pull up some data. And so in this game, so if I start with the passing, progressive pass distance, Sjoberg 390, Bentancur 263. So we're talking about an extra 50% from Sjoberg, more progressive passing from Sjoberg. But if you're looking at progressive carries, Bentancur 205, this is meters, I assume, and Sjoberg 94. So basically, Bentancur is carrying the ball forward more in a progressive way, and Sjoberg is passing the ball forward more in a progressive way. So it's quite an interesting stylistic difference. I agree with Nathan, we could have had more carrying in this game for sure. I think partly, you know, Kulusevski was really crowded. Sorry, what I was going to say earlier, and I completely forgot, is when I was talking about how we wouldn't notice a downgrade on Doty too much because we're in such a good place that it won't make a difference. The real difference to me has been the relationship between Kulusevski and Emerson compared to the relationship between Kulusevski and Doty, which I felt was a really blossoming understanding. It's just not there with Emerson and Kulusevski.
And it has the impact on Romero as well. We didn't see Romero go wandering up because he just doesn't have that on that right-hand side. They don't have the relationship. There's the goal we scored against Villa where I described it like a train track, just motoring down the right-hand side, and all three of them were involved. And yeah, they just don't have that connection at the moment.
For sure.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we've spoken quite a bit on this podcast about Pochettino. What's going on there?
A pretty baseless, unsupported, unverified, unseconded rumor about a manager swap between PSG and Tottenham.
So it's felt like a bad fit, PSG and Pochettino, from day one, really. He's won them a league, but the suggestion is that PSG want rid of Pochettino, and of course what that means is PSG need a new top level elite manager to come in and fail to make their players press, and perhaps they're going to try for Conte.
I mean, I just don't see Conte, Neymar and Messi getting on at all.
Also, like, their whole thing is they win, they walk the league every season. That's not a problem. Pochettino just did it and they're going to sack him. They want someone who's going to win the Champions League. They're going to bring in Conte, who's a league specialist who...
who's won 3 out of 15 games in the Champions League in his history.
So I'm not really sure what the thinking is there, to be honest.
I think it's just one of these rumours that it's an easy time to do it. Sunday night, not much happening. Let's just create something. Pochettino's getting sacked. He's got literally nowhere else to go in the world. Let's just make up some noise. And everybody's complaining. Conte needs to sign a contract. He needs to commit to the club. Didn't he just sign a contract 7 months ago? He's got another season left on his contract, plus an extension that's available there. I think that's quite a long time to have a top-level manager committed to the club for. And I think it's just people putting two and two together and just getting five and just thinking and wishing that Pochettino comes back.
I'm going to choose to not be bothered about this either way, because whatever happens, we end up with a world-class manager.
Yeah. Firstly, I think that the rumours are difficult to put too much credit into. And secondly, there isn't a wrong solution to this. So I sort of don't have especially strong feelings, yeah.
If Conte goes, we'll get a decent compensation fee from PSG, and then Pochettino will be available for free. So...
I want to see Conte have a pre-season, get his players, and then go for it.
Oh, it would be really annoying if he left now for PSG. I think a lot of people would think that was quite a cowardly thing for him to do at this stage in his Spurs career. But, you know, when PSG, with their many millions, come calling, difficult to resist, I guess. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening on the Patreon. It's been a quiet week. I've had the week from hell, literally had one of the worst weeks of my life, to be honest. So it's been a little bit quiet. But we're going to do a live Q&A, hopefully soon. Nathan, what are you working on at the moment?
I was like, oh, I don't have internet for a week. I downloaded the Brighton game in full so I could examine what they did. And I downloaded a bunch of set pieces so I could do those offline and upload them when I had connection. And then I've just spent the whole week moving things around, like from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, just moving furniture. So, yeah. So, I don't know. Do I do set pieces or do I push on with left back stuff? I have been doing a little bit of left back work. I've crossed out some names. I have some. Yeah, okay. Maybe I do left backs. Return to left backs this week, I guess, especially on the back of Sessegnon Young's performance.
Mm. Yeah, and I think Reguilon as well has not stepped up to play this left wing back role very effectively. I think Reguilon is a passable player, but again, for me, much better in a back four. He has less responsibility to create. And I think left back will become an essential in the summer, if it's not already. And Bardi, you got masses of emails about people wanting to write for us.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Now you can stop emailing now. We'll put out another request in a few weeks. Thank you very much. I've been in touch with a few people, still a few more to get back to. We'll be looking at doing a newsletter, and those that don't make it into the newsletter will go into the blog. On my holiday away, I finished another book, so we've got two book reports coming up in the next couple of weeks.
I also wanted to remind people to listen to our bonus episode called Sports Psychology Uncertainty. So we put out bonus episodes every now and again, and simply by being flagged as a bonus episode, they get far fewer listens than our regular episodes. And I think the sports psychology stuff that we do with Alex Stoyle, who is a sports psychologist and Spurs fan, I think it's really good stuff. I think Alex is absolutely brilliant and he's very easy to listen to. So I'd urge you to, if you've not heard the sports psychology episode, go back and give that a listen. And I also wanted to give a shout out to Lynx or GTFO on Reddit, who is the one that beefed with Bardi one of the people that beefed with Bardi about the Son comment. He actually
He fired shots at everybody here, not just me.
Yeah. He said that we have some of the most ridiculous takes that it's hard to take us seriously. But he did back down a little bit when I pressed him on it and kind of like allowed the... So the takes that he specified were that Dele is actually a class player and his shortcomings are because of position manager injuries, etc., instead of him just not being skilled enough. I stand by that. I mean, I think Dele in the right team is just goes back to being old Dele, and that is a wonderful player.
I'd like to distance myself from that one.
His second one was that our take about Lucas should have been sold back before we signed Kulusevski. I stand by that as well. I'd sell Lucas tomorrow. I think he's, you know, absolutely near the top of the list of players we should sell in the summer. And the third one was that Son should be replaced. And I don't think Bardi actually said that. I think what Bardi was saying was that Son's skill set was perhaps less suited to the Brighton game, and therefore we need an alternative to Son. Although Bardi does have a tendency to want to sell our best players.
So does Nathan. I put in the notes there. It's a little bit me, a little bit Nathan. But I think selling our players when they're at their peak is something that we should be doing better.
Mm. Sure, but that wasn't... You sort of, with Chris, you raised the discussion point around Son's strengths and weaknesses, and you explicitly said the opposite. You explicitly said, I'm not saying we should sell Son. I'm not saying we should... Like, obviously, Son's brilliant and has to start. It's like, that's what you said. And that, of course, that's my position too. It's just acknowledging that his weaknesses to the system and the limitations that give us and how we can tactically plan and where and when you might sub him or not. I don't know.
I got to say, Chris Somerset was very slippery. I tried to lure him up a hill or two, but he's just too smart for me. I couldn't bait him into a hot take.
So Lynx or GTFO, I hope we've done your post justice.
Why are we engaging with this?
I thought it was funny.
Worse takes than those.
It's a Spurs podcast, true. And we record every week. There's going to be some bad takes, you know?
Not from me.
Not from Bardi. Joel Brooks says, so without wishing to throw too much shade on Real, is Marcel Lavinia ready for first team football? Similarly, Phil Mayo says, any chance you could give a quick rundown on Lavinia's profile and projection? Wing-back's obviously an issue, and with his inclusion in the team, I wonder what, if anything, we might expect from him with Doherty out. So Lavinia was on the bench for the Brighton game, but not for the Brentford game, which was quite interesting, I thought. I don't think Lavinia is a Spurs level player. He's a young player. He's pretty much untested. He's someone we picked up from Chelsea. He was, I think, released by Chelsea and then signed for Spurs shortly after. He's not a bad player at all. He's perfectly competent as a player. He's fine. Not, in my opinion, someone who's going to be a Spurs player for the future. I suspect we might loan him out to a kind of League One-ish side next year, maybe, to build some value and then sell him. I think it'd be unfair to throw him in right now, personally. Although, if he did come in, I don't think he'd do terribly. I think he'd be absolutely adequate in the same way that Royale's not tearing up trees, you know? Nothing to get too excited about. Nathan, I wanted to ask you this one. It's been in the... We've got so many questions, and we need to do another episode where we just bash through the questions. People were constantly sending us stuff. But this one's been here for a while. It was from Harry Tatterson Stokes, Harry, if I've messed your name up. It says, for Nathan, I too am an adult who undoubtedly has ADHD, but have never been diagnosed. I have a normal office job, and for a number of reasons, getting an official diagnosis and being able to provide my place of work with this would be helpful for my targets and performance expectations. I don't even know where to start with this, though. Maybe a football pod isn't the best place to ask advice, but if you need some non-football chat to fill the beginning of the pod, feel free to let me know how you've gone about doing this, Nathan.
It's been really, really difficult. I did a bunch of research and stuff to assert my confidence, and then I called up my GP, and my GP said, yeah, can't really do anything for you, though. Because in my county, they don't treat ADHD in adults. They consider it a learning difficulty. He said if you'd called back when you were a kid, we would have been able to get you some learning difficulty support. But now you're an adult. Like, I could push this through. I could get you a diagnosis, and then that would be the end of our treatment. So I have been pushing through a referral to a private care company called Psychiatry UK, who I hopefully, if it goes through, and I'm now sort of haven't heard anything for a while, but hopefully if this goes through, and maybe I need to chase them up and just check that the referral has been placed, and I'm now on like a long, like 2-year waiting list or whatever, but I will then be able to sort of split the costs between the NHS and myself, and I'll have to pay a while up front, and then my care, once I've got the medication and the treatment that I'm seeking, I'll then be able to switch back to sort of, you know, NHS coverage. So it's been difficult. It's been really difficult. Now I'm actually in a different county where I'm living. I'm considering whether it's worth making the switch, or whether if the referral's already made, where I'm going to be living in a year's time, all that kind of stuff. But the thing, so I had to, I had to fill out this form in order to get or push for the referral. And this is something that happens to me quite a lot with any task that seems really big. I can't do it at all. I catastrophize about it. My dissertation and similar difficult coursework, sometimes if my video is going to be like an hour long, I can struggle. I get really nervous and uneasy before recording. Moving house was like, once I get going, it's fine because I'm in the flow. But getting started with moving house, getting started with my all of those kind of things, getting started with the longer articles I used to write, I have like small breakdowns before doing them. And it was very much the case with the referral, and I had to lean on my parents and my girlfriend really, really hard. They had to drag me through this kicking and screaming, because in order to get a referral for ADHD, you need to perform a bunch of tasks that people with ADHD can't do, right? So I had to get help. So I guess my first recommendation before calling your GP and praying that they actually care for people with various conditions in your area is, if you have the people in your life that you can lean on, ask for their help with it, because I could not have done, I could not have got anywhere at all without my girlfriend's help on this.
Thank you for sharing, Nathan. Just to add that there are a number of people in the Discord who have an ADHD diagnosis and are very open to talking about that. So if people who are ex-subs wanted to come into the Discord and chat about it, there's a mental health thread where ADHD comes up a fair amount. And there's a nice little supportive community there who are willing to kind of share ideas around treatment and whatnot. So Harry, if you wanted to come and join in, then it'd be great to have you there. Before we go, just to remind you to check out Humans of Purpose. Search for the podcast title on your podcast player. If you like it, make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a review. And you can learn more about the show at humansofpurpose.com. And I totally forgot to say, I'm bald now.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud @DLindmer. Do check him out, he's great. follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.